today on Indie Newswire. There's been a lot of action, so there's a lot to talk about. It's May 30th, 2008. We'll talk to a member of the Friendly Fire Collective, which participated in the action at Chevron's annual shareholders meeting on Wednesday. Chevron, along with its conglomerated associates, Unocal and Texaco, is responsible for human rights abuses in some of the world's most exploited locales, Burma, Ecuador, Iraq, and Nigeria, among so many others. We'll hear audio and commentary from the janitor strike over the hill and share information about next week's strike at UCSC. It's been postponed. La Migra has been busy this May. ICE raids and the statewide response, protests in Marin and L.A., San Francisco, and more. Locally, someone attacks surveillance cameras to call attention to the raids. There's a press conference and rally tonight at 5 in the flats. More from Indie Bay. Andrew Flood, an Irish anarchist, spent the last several months traveling the U.S., reporting on social movements in this country. His interviews and audio are posted at Ireland's Indie Media as well as local IMCs. The SCIU local was attacked by opponents of institutionalized unions. Some are confused about the motive, but we'll get some context. You see, SCIU's actions in Puerto Rico smell like union battles, with one union trying to break another. Divide and conquer colonialism, anyone? And more audio. Women's e-news, Venezuela analysis, and anti-racist education from KBOO, a program on stereotypes and typecasts, and another on mixed-race identity. All this and more. A study published in the May-June of the journal Child Development shows that 9 of 10 girls between ages 12 and 18 report experiencing sexual harassment. More details on Indie Newswire, where we'll also get an update from Oaxaca. Teachers in the streets once again. Monday, there's a noontime gathering at the UCSC Tree Sit. This year's Grassroots Radio Conference dates from KBOO in Portland, July 24th to 27th. All this, plus the schedule for this summer's Guerrilla Drive-In. And Utah Phillips is on my mind. A very personal thanks to Utah for his vocal and unwavering support of this very station and community and pirate radio in general. Working on a ship, may never sail on it. Ship's gonna sail someday. Working on a ship, may never sail on it. Working on a ship, gonna sail someday.
I don't make songs like this very often. Never. It's kind of a chant, so I need help on it. It's got a refrain, and then it has a chorus. Well, let's see. Sojourner Truth said, ain't I a woman? Ship gonna sail someday. That's your line. Ship gonna sail someday. Joe Hill said, don't want organized. Ship gonna sail someday. And the chorus goes, working on a ship, may never sail on. Ship gonna sail someday. Working on a ship, may never sail on. Gonna build it anyway. You try it. Working on a ship, may never sail on. Ship gonna sail someday. Working on a ship, may never sail on. Gonna build it anyway. Let's start over. Sojourner Truth said, ain't I a woman? Ship gonna sail someday. Mother Jones said, no child labor. Ship gonna sail someday. Joe Hill said, don't want organized. Ship gonna sail someday. Gene Deb said, well, there's a soul in prison. Ship gonna sail someday. We're working on a ship, may never sail on. Ship gonna sail someday. Working on a ship, may never sail on. Gonna build it anyway. Marie Sugar said, sit down, ship gonna sail someday. Paul Robeson said, I won't stop singing, ship gonna sail someday. Martin Luther King said, I have a dream, ship gonna sail someday. Malcolm X said, power to the people, ship gonna sail someday. Working on a ship, may never sail on. Ship gonna sail someday. Working on a ship, may never sail on. Gonna build it anyway. Cesar Chavez said, viva la huelga. Ship gonna sail someday. Dorothy Day said, swords into plowshares. Ship gonna sail someday. Judy Berry said, no compromise. Ship gonna sail someday. Bill Berrigan said, no more atom bombs. Ship gonna sail someday. Working on a ship, may never sail on. Ship gonna sail someday. Working on a ship, may never sail on. Gonna build it anyway. They're all gone, and we're still building. Ship gonna sail someday. With hand and heart and mind and muscle. Ship gonna sail someday. Working on a ship, May never sail on ship, gonna sail someday. We're working on a ship, may never sail on, gonna build it anyway.
Women's E-News, weekly summary of news about women, women's issues, and from women's perspectives. From the weekly Cheers and Jeers column of May 24th, 2008. I'm Sandy Billings. We start with cheers for news that Congress acts pro-woman. On May 21st, the U.S. House of Representatives unanimously passed a resolution sponsored by Representative Lois Capps, a Democrat of California, to reduce maternal deaths at home and abroad. The resolution makes the United States part of the UN Population Fund's initiative to reduce women's deaths from pregnancy and childbirth. Since 2002, the Bush administration has withheld funding from the agency because it says it supports coerced abortions in China. On the same day, the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Health held the first hearing on a bill to benefit breast cancer patients, 12 years after it was first introduced by Representative Rosa DeLauro, a Democrat from Connecticut. The bill would extend hospital stay coverage for cancer patients who have mastectomies. An online petition has gathered 22 million signatures to support it. The subcommittee also discussed a bill that would mandate the National Institute of Health to conduct research on environmental factors that might cause breast cancer. The bill would authorize a 5-year, $40 million grant program for the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences. More news to cheer this week. A May 20th study from the American Association of University Women examined student performance over the past 35 years in 50 states and focused on standardized test scores. The finding? Both girls' and boys' performance is improving. Girls are not succeeding at the expense of boys, but income disparities rather than gender has a greater impact on educational performance and achievement. The association says the study debunks the boy crisis theory in education and provides a more extensive view of gender equity trends. In West Africa, a Burkina Faso court convicted 15 women for the genital mutilation of 14 female infants. Karagio Zerbo, who performed the procedure, was sentenced to 2 years in prison. The 14 mothers of the infants received suspended 1-year sentences. Female genital mutilation was banned in Burkina Faso in 1996, but remains a widespread cultural practice in 28 African countries. Female ski jumpers from 6 countries, Canada, the United States, Germany, Austria, Slovenia, and Norway, have sued the Vancouver Organizing Committee for the 2010 Winter Olympics for not allowing women to compete in ski jumping. Their lawsuit asked the committee to either hold a competition for women or ban the men's equivalent event. Now for the bad news. The Jeers column leads with news that the VA falls short. The Department of Veteran Affairs is struggling to offer services to 180,000 women who have been deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Patricia Hayes, the VA's National Director of Women's Healthcare Issues, is quoted as saying, "It's not your father's VA. It really isn't. We have geared up and are gearing up, but there are places that may have gaps," unquote. Services ranging from pap smears and mammograms to support for military sexual trauma suffer from budgetary shortfalls in the male-oriented Army tradition. More news to jeer this week. Mexico City law enforcement agents are failing to address sexual violence despite a sweeping February 2007 law mandating enforcement of women's complaints of violence. Mexico City's Commission on Human Rights reported a 12% increase in women's complaints against police for failure to follow through in cases of domestic violence and sexual abuse since the law was introduced. In 21 of 31 Mexican states, rapists can still escape punishment if they say they are acting to satisfy an erotic fantasy. In 19 states, the rapist is off the hook if he later marries the victim. All charges against a Saudi couple accused of severely abusing an Indonesian domestic worker were dropped. The judge awarded the victim, Noor Miyadi, $670. Miyadi, 25 years old, lost several fingers and toes from gangrene because her employers allegedly tied her up for a month and left her without food in 2005. Attacks on black lesbians are increasing in South Africa, and a lesbian is murdered every 3 months, according to People Opposed to Women Abuse. Activists protested in front of a court where 4 people accused in the April murder of Yudi Simelane appeared. At Harvard University, students in the Harvard Right to Life group are promoting an initiative to refund health insurance fees that help pay for abortion services. The proposed refund is $1 per term for students enrolled in the insurance plan and has raised questions about whether students will be able to opt out of other services they don't support, such as birth control. Cuba State Television refused to broadcast a documentary highlighting the issue of sexually aggressive male exhibitionism in the country. The Institute of Cinematic Arts and Industry Film contained interviews with 2,000 women. Of these, 97.7% had at least one experience with a flasher, and 62% reported several encounters. Also noted in the news this week, Nelly Avila Moreno, the leading commander of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, surrendered to the secret police on May 18th. Known as Karina, she was a member of the paramilitary for 24 years and resigned because she feared a comrade would kill or capture her for the $2 million bounty placed on her by President Alvaro Uribe. Negotiating under an amnesty law, Moreno may receive up to 8 years in prison for murder, extortion, and kidnapping. Although homosexuality is illegal in Iran, the government supports and funds half the costs for those wanting to undergo gender reassignment surgery. The government must approve the surgery, then the person's gender is officially changed on birth certificates. Gender reassignment surgery was legalized 20 years ago for diagnosed transsexuals on the basis that they have a medical condition that can be fixed. There have been over 450 gender reassignment surgeries in the past 12 years. These news briefs were compiled by Bessie Lucci and Dominique Sogel. Rita Henley Jensen is the editor-in-chief. This production of Women's E-News is brought to you by VP Foundation and Yen Radio. Background music
Free
is by
Radio,
Joan Hickey.
101.1 FM. I don't want to talk over the credits too much, but if we're going to give foundational credit, then I'm going to thank Utah Phillips for supporting this station and the informal Utah Phillips Foundation for getting out there and spreading the word about pirate radio and free radio and community media and this station in particular. You're listening to the Indie Newswire show, and on the phone here we have David from the Friendly Fire Collective. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz. David, are you there? We seem to have lost David, so I'll try that phone call one more time and see what we can do to get him on the phone. Chevron shareholders meeting was on Wednesday morning, and so David was in a group of folks that were there protesting outside with delegations globally. So I'll get him back on the phone, and we'll talk about that action.
A sound or make a move will kill you. Then they gathered around me. One man took my right arm, and another man took my left. When a third man grabbed the front of my coat, then thrown into an automobile we rode. Oh, I wish
Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. That's new from Anti-Flag. It's the bonus track on the end of their latest. So David is on the phone with us now. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. You're a member of the Friendly Fire Collective, one of the organizations that participated in Wednesday's events, and our listeners have heard a little bit about Chevron in general. And have been encouraged to look at the photos and things and probably seen them. But what exactly happened on Wednesday? What went down outside of the shareholders meeting?
One part of the Friendly Fire Collective, and we're one of many groups that are involved in direct action to stop the war, which is an organization of in San Francisco, which you can tell by its name, is doing different actions focusing on a variety of issues. And so one of the things it's been doing is working with different community groups in the Bay Area, targeting Chevron. And so what happened on Wednesday was the annual shareholders meeting in San Ramon, which is where Chevron's world headquarters are. And a number of local groups from the Richmond area that are where the Chevron refinery is organized this protest in solidarity with groups from Burma, the Philippines, Nigeria, Ecuador, all of which sent delegates to the shareholders meeting and were actually ceded time to talk by shareholders and address David O'Reilly, who is Chevron's CEO.
How did the CEO and the shareholders respond? Were folks able to actually have any kind of interaction with the shareholders as they arrived?
Are you talking about the delegates themselves?
Either as they arrived outside or as the members that addressed the board.
Yeah, we were able to set up in front, actually, on Chevron's property. There's like a little grass field in front of the entrance. We were able to set up there. We had about, 100 to 150 people. The majority of us were dressed in hazmat suits, and the theme of the action was cleaning up Chevron. And so we were able to stand out front. We had a number of signs and leaflets and that kind of stuff. And so all the shareholders who were entering Chevron had to pass through these gates and see us as they went through. And so that was the main interaction that we had with them. Of course, there were some folks who were able to go inside to the meeting. As I said, representatives from communities in Burma, Ecuador, Nigeria were given time to actually speak at the meeting, and so they were able to address the shareholders directly and David O'Reilly, their CEO, directly, and bring their issues to the front.
What are the issues that they were bringing up? What are the concerns that folks have with Chevron?
Well, let's see. We'll start off in Ecuador, I guess. Texaco and Chevron have been working on oil fields there and have left a number of open pits of sludge as they moved out of Ecuador. They left open pits of oil sludge in these communities, made some minor repairs to some temporary solutions to fixing these oil pits and said that they were safe. Communities then set up homes and built on top of these oil pits are now facing severe cancer risks. Lots of the community of different diseases as a direct result of these pits. The Ecuadorian government recently said that Chevron is liable for $16 billion in damages. And so that's what's going on in Ecuador. In Nigeria, the community is not getting their share of the resources, and Chevron is actually openly attacking the communities there. Sending in soldiers to attack peaceful protests. And in Burma, Chevron is still invested despite the sanctions. And the money that they're pouring into Burma is actually propping up the military regime.
Did Chevron respond in any way to the protest or to the delegations or to any of these accusations?
Well, when they were addressed inside, Larry Bwoto, I believe is his name, who's the Nigerian delegate, who was actually shot by Nigerian security forces who were paid by Chevron. He was called a criminal by David O'Reilly and said that his claims were completely unfounded. Luis Yanza, who is an Ecuadorian, who recently received the, I think it's the Goldman Environmental Prize, which is one of the most prestigious environmental prizes in the world for his work in doing community organizing in the Ecuadorian Amazon. He was called a con artist by David O'Reilly and said that his claims were completely unfounded as well. And so that's basically how Chevron has been responding to these communities and these people whose claims are backed up by not only different organizations within the United States, but the Ecuadorian government, for example, numerous human rights groups throughout the world, is just denying them and then trying to shift the blame back on these communities themselves.
So that's a pretty cavalier response to protests and to folks who have traveled across the world. Chevron, of course, has been involved in a relatively large PR campaign to try to discredit the winner of the Goldman Prize in particular, as they're in court due to some of his work. I did hear that the man from Nigeria who had been shot had been called a criminal, and that they actually did, in addition to blaming him for his own, for the his own wound, his own injury, also made it clear that if anyone should be arrested, it should be him, because there were, it was during an action that, that this incident took place. Is that correct? During some kind of confrontation at the rig?
Yeah, my understanding is that there was a protest on one of the Chevron oil platforms in Nigeria. The Chevron then sent in or called for Nigerian troops to be sent in, I believe on Chevron helicopters, company helicopters, called them in, and then the troops opened fire on the protesters, killing two, I believe, and wounding many more, including Blair Bota, who's there on Wednesday.
So they've been, I mean, it's, I hesitate to state the obvious, but Chevron's been involved in violent exploitation of communities all around the world in order to extract oil. But in San Ramon, in the, at the, where the corporate headquarters are of this hugely global conglomerate, what's going on with the local communities there? How did the people who are actually from San Ramon, people from outside the gates of the refinery, react to the shareholders and to this protest?
Well, the headquarters are on, you know, a busy thoroughfare just off the freeway. There wasn't too much interaction with people. It's not really a pedestrian area, but there was lots of cars going by. You know, we heard lots of horns honking in support. But the real local community that's being affected the most is in Richmond, California, which is in the East Bay, which is where the Chevron refinery is. They've had a number of really severe health effects that have come from breathing in the toxic air around the refinery, extremely high rates of cancer, lung disease, that sort of thing. And so right now they're trying to fight off an expansion of the factory, actually, because Chevron is trying to start importing dirty crude oil, which is a cheaper form of oil. But its environmental effects are much more devastating, especially to the areas where it's being refined. And so they're fighting off an expansion of the Chevron refinery that would further be an attack on the Richmond community. And so that's the real area where the fight's going on in the Bay Area.
Now, you mentioned Burma briefly. This has obviously been going on, this campaign and this work against these oil profiteers and war profiteers. For years and years, and pre-cyclone, with the crackdown, the most recent crackdown in Burma, there were calls for Chevron to divest their interest in this pipeline, for Chevron to take some kind of responsibility for its role in propping up the military junta, to move, you know, to explain how it got grandfathered out of the sanctions, etc. And Chevron's response was the same as you're describing, just saying it's not our problem, shifting blame elsewhere. So it's pretty clear that this is a pattern. Can you talk a little bit about Chevron in Iraq as a pretty tangible and concrete, like, straight-up war profiteer example here?
Yeah, well, let me just comment on Burma real quick, too, and then I'll go into Iraq. My understanding of the situation in Burma is that Unocal went in with a number of other companies in the early 90s in Burma and started building this pipeline. And then when Chevron acquired Unocal and they merged, Chevron then took over operation of that pipeline. When David O'Reilly, the CEO, was questioned about it by the Chronicle last year, he was saying that, you know, Chevron has helped the Burmese people by this investment, which is obviously, you know, totally inaccurate, because what they're doing really is funneling money directly to the military junta, which is operating the country. In his justification, he said, well, Chevron operated in Angola for years during their civil war, and was saying that their operations in Angola could be compared to their operations in Burma, and how that would be successful. Well, obviously, their operations in Angola were extremely flawed too, and received much criticism for many of the same reasons.
That's quite a can of worms to open up for himself.
I'm sorry.
That's incredible. That's quite a can of worms to open up and put yourself in. Favorably compare our situation with Angola.
Yeah, right?
Wow.
But anyway, shifting back to Iraq that you mentioned. Chevron was one of the major pushers of the war in Iraq going into it in 2003. They were very adamant about wanting to get the oil reserves in Iraq into American business hands, especially theirs, of course. And so they pushed very strongly for the war. They're heavily invested in Iraq right now, and they're pushing for the Iraqi oil law, which would be a privatization of oil, I believe, in Iraq, and shifting most of the profits straight to American corporations.
So what kind of actions are planned or discussed as a follow-up for this? There's the shareholders is a huge gathering of those who actually profit and to a limited extent direct what the company does, but who use their place as investors in Chevron to influence what happens, out in the field, which is a strange thing to say, in the oil fields. But as for consumers, for media, for government officials, for whomever, what other ways can we pressure Chevron? What other ways can we more than pressure? Can we? I'm looking for the word in order to actually cause some kind of a damage, some kind of response, some kind of way to impact Chevron's bottom line, to make them somehow accountable. There are court cases working their way where, you know, Chevron's being sued. There are
right.
protests outside the shareholders meeting. Those who are combating Chevron are receiving these awards. So it seems like a pretty widespread campaign. What would you recommend that listeners can do?
Well, I think what was demonstrated the most on Wednesday was how all the different communities that are affected by Chevron really need to interact with each other and cooperate and attack it on many different fronts, attack Chevron on many different fronts in order to make an impact on the company. And so, you know, what you saw is you saw activists from Nigeria, from Burma, from the Philippines, from Ecuador, from Richmond, all coming together and addressing the company. And that, you know, that's obviously really successful. Other ways to, you know, that we can fight locally is, of course, is supporting the community in Richmond and their fight against the Chevron refinery. The refinery there, you know, imports oil directly from Iraq. It's one of the biggest refineries on the West Coast, and it is receiving oil from Iraq daily. And so direct action to stop the war, along with some other groups on March 15th, this past March 15th, organized a protest that shut down the refinery for a day. And so, you know, that's the kind of stuff that we can be doing locally, is this sort of action against where we see Chevron coming up in our communities. And so, you know, we hit their refinery, we hit their shareholders meeting yesterday on March 19th, on the anniversary of the war. There were one of many corporations that was targeted downtown, and their offices were shut down for the day. So that's the kind of stuff that we can be doing locally, is supporting the communities that are trying to resist Chevron's encroachment, as well as organizing our own actions to target the company and try to put a dent in their day-to-day operations.
I'm looking at the webpage for the group, the Friendly Fire Collective. There's a lot of audio and video posted up, and just general material that folks can learn a lot from, and play and listen to and watch. It seems like almost there's a fair amount of media activism that folks are doing as well as direct action and you know, coalition building with other organizations. How long has the Friendly Fire Collective been around?
I guess it was being formed over the course of the past several months. We kind of finally got it together, got the website up, and started started doing our own writing and our, you know, really trying to distro different articles and videos and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of been up since March, I suppose. And yeah, so, you know, our goal there is really political education and get folks kind of plugged into different outlets, you know, analysis of current events, you know, different discussions over strategy and theory and tactics and, you know, the best ways that that we can hit these big corporations or, you know, the big government or, you know, what these kind of pillars that are holding up the war or attacks on immigrant communities or environmental degradation, all these sort of things, we see them all linked together. And, you know, we really just want to kind of provide a forum for people to get plugged in, become more aware of what's going on, and also, you know, learn a lot and kind of, you know, get people on the same page, but also, you know, provide a forum for people to interact with each other and discuss the best way to move forward.
Right on. Well, thank you for coming on the air and talking about it and talking about the action. Thanks for being there Wednesday morning. It was an early morning for all those involved.
It was very early morning. Still recovering. But yeah, thanks a lot for having us on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I guess if you're more interested in the Friendly Fire Collective, our website is friendlyfirecollective.info.
Is there anything else you want to tell us about?
I'm sorry?
Is there anything else you want to tell us about? Final word?
No, that's it. I guess just check out our website. Also, you can check out Direct Action to Stop the War's website if you're interested in getting involved in that. It's actagainstwar.net. But thank you very much for having us on.
Absolutely. Thank you, David. Have a good day.
Have a good one.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM at freakradio.org and www.indiebay.org as well here. But this is the Indie News Wire show, of course. That was David from the Friendly Fire Collective. Again, that website, friendlyfirecollective.info, talking about the Chevron shareholders meeting this past Wednesday. Stay tuned, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org.